So we hear today, in typical St. Luke fashion, about our Lord Jesus being on a journey, a very important one. He's going to Jerusalem, so it says, and we all know what that means. Some tradition, history from the rest of the gospel, we know that when he goes to Jerusalem, he's on his way there to be offered up, to be handed over, and to lay down his life for the entire world. So this is the most important trip of his entire life. And indeed, as he's going along the way, he is teaching and preaching, as it says, and then from the crowd, questions are tossed out for him to answer. And the question that is tossed out at the beginning of our gospel passage we have for today from Luke chapter 13 is a profoundly important one, one that was obviously on their minds and one that should be on all of our minds as well, every day, every week, every month, every year. It matters so much. The question is, Lord, who's going to be saved? Who is going to be saved? It's phrased like this, Lord, will only a few people be saved? Is there some sort of a select, limited number? So we can ask, what would prompt someone to ask a question like that? What does that mean exactly? Why ask him such a question? And the answer, you know, goes like this, if you know the background, a little bit of the time. Now, at this particular point in Jewish history, there was a great deal of speculation about this very question. What does it mean to have salvation? When was God going to act in a definitive and beautiful and striking manner to bring about the fullness of his plan? There was a lot of speculation about the coming of the end of the ages and the coming of the Messiah and the promised one and the prophecies being fulfilled of old. So you might understand there was unrest in the territories. The Romans were around with their garrisons and their towns and their cities, making everybody all wondering when was God going to fix this difficult problem called the occupying powers. The Essenes and other monastic communities were forming on the outskirts, the territories down by the Dead Sea and elsewhere, because they were going to pray and fast to usher in the coming of the next and new era. So with all this speculation about the coming of the next step of God's plan of righteousness and fulfillment, it was common to debate in the street corners, the synagogues, the temple, with the authorities, who is in and who is out? Who's among the chosen and who are going to be left out? The Jews had a careful understanding about these things. They were the chosen people. And even within Jerusalem, within the Jews themselves, they were forming little camps and groups saying, well, this one's going to be saved and these are on the edges. So the question of the day was, who is in and who is out? Very, very important to know. When God comes, who's going to be on his good side? Maybe that's the best way that we can put it. So they asked the question of the traveling rabbi, Jesus, who do you think is in and who is out? Good question. And for us, something of the same, no? Not so much about God's fullness in the Jewish sense of the term, but in our Christian sense, who is going to heaven? Who is in, who is out? Who is going to have alive in our hearts the fullness of God's grace, experience the depths of his mercy, be fully alive, and then when we get to the end of this life, make it all the way into the next one in the fullness of his reign, the fullness of his kingdom? We should ask the same question. Who's in? Who's out? By way of response, Jesus gives an interesting answer. He doesn't answer the question directly in typical good teaching fashion. He has more to say about it than the simple categorization that the question implies. He says this, I guess, and I probably put it this way. There are three things that he says that apply to what salvation means, at least in this particular conversation. The first one is this, that we should know about who's in, who's out, what does salvation mean. The first thing he says is that it's going to involve a struggle. There's going to be a struggle to get there. What does he say? He says, strive to enter through the narrow gate. For many, I tell you, will attempt to enter, but will not be strong enough. So, and the wording he uses implies there's going to be sort of a bunch of masses, a kind of jostling or an elbowing to get, you know, into this tight little gate, this narrow space. And there's going to have to be a sort of effort and struggle to get to the end of it. So salvation requires a struggle. It requires effort on our part. So think about that, right? I mean, maybe it's a struggle in our own hearts against personal sins and difficulties. I certainly have mine. I know we all have them, right? Things that we try and fight against that often seem so difficult. Maybe it's a struggle on a broader level for a better society as we work in our homes and communities to end violence, to bring about peace, to bring about the respect for the human person in all of its stages and forms. So the struggle is always going to go on for salvation. So the narrow gate, he says, you got to jostle your way in, and if you're not strong enough, you're not going to make it. Okay? So who is saved? Those who are up for a struggle, those who are ready for a little bit of a fight, right? Second thing he says, right, there's the struggle piece of it, yes, and then he says there's a time limit. There's a finite end to this whole opportunity. At some point, the window, or the word he uses, the door, is going to close. It's going to close shut, and then there'll be no more chances, no more shots at salvation. So what does he say? You know, after the master of the house has arisen and locked the door, then you'll stand outside knocking and saying, Lord, open the door for us. And he'll say to him in reply, no, I don't know who you are, right? So not only do we have to struggle to get through the narrow gate, but at some point the gate is going to close. So there must be an urgency about this business of getting saved. Little story to illustrate maybe the point, right? Put another context. You might remember that about a year ago, just under, we were out to Philadelphia, some of us from the parish, for the World Meeting of Families to see Pope Francis and experience that whole wonderful event, great experience. And on the last day of the meeting on Sunday for the Papal Mass, at the end of the day, there were throngs and throngs of people, thousands of us, all trying to get out of there. And the part that I was in, they had us in a separate section up toward the front, so we had to come down and get bussed out of the security zone over to this other place so we could get taxis to wherever we're supposed to go in, around town, the city, you know, whatever. So I got down there in Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, after dark, with all of my 10,000 closest friends. And it became very obvious as we're standing along the side of the road when the buses came up that we were not all going to get on these buses. And they said, they assured me, well, Father, more buses are going to come, so you know we're going to get you all out of here eventually. Now, nobody, to be very plain, wants to be in Philly after dark. That's just a fact, right? So I'm watching what begins to ensue as all these people in good Catholic Christian fashion just tackle each other to get at these handful of doorways and get on these buses and flee for their lives, right? Now, whatever you may think about me, I'm not really a pushy kind of person by nature in general, so I thought I would just take this in for a bit and observe. An hour and a half later and 10 batches of buses later, I am still standing in the throng of people. And I'm going, if I don't leave here, I'm going to die. So I said, the next batch that comes, I am moving for that narrow gate, the little doorway, right? And away I went, and in we all dove, and I was the last one in, and the door shut behind me, and I got the last seat, and I escaped Philadelphia with my life. Thanks be to God. So you can picture the scene, right? We've all kind of been something like that, you know? Jesus is saying, that's how it's going to be. You've got to want to get on the bus, people. And the door is going to shut if you don't. So if there's no urgency, no effort, no drive, then you're out of luck. You're not going to make it out of the world alive in the fullness of my salvation. So that's what he's going for, right? There is a bit of a jostling that's involved. There is a door that will close. But then there is this third part, right? There's a little bit more to the story. Third part goes like this. Yes, there is a jostling. Yes, there's the doorway. And the third part is, you shouldn't think that the most obvious people are going to get on the bus, so to speak. The saved ones might not be who you expect. He says, I am redefining the group. I am changing the rules of the game that you have been playing with for quite some time. So there's all this conversation about, you know, well, you taught on our streets, and you drank in our company, and you know went to McDonald's with us, Jesus, and had coffee in the morning, so we know who you are, right? And he says, no, not necessarily. Same thing for the first reading from Isaiah. What that is about is God's promise to expand the boundaries of salvation well beyond the chosen people. I'm going to take Israel, he says, and I'm going to multiply you dramatically. And in fact, my salvation is going to become so expansive that the very people you don't like right now, those neighbors that you think are out, I'm going to make priests out of them, and they'll come to the temple, and they're going to worship. So generous is my offer of salvation. It's going to start from you, and it's going to move. I'm going to turn your idea on its head, right? So he's trying to say, if you think that you're automatically in, then you're probably not. The Jews at the time had gotten rather caught up in a notion that because they were of the chosen people, because they were sons of Abraham, as the Pharisees famously put it elsewhere in the gospel, they had an automatic in. And Jesus says, there are no automatic ins to my kingdom. In fact, he says, the very people you don't think are going to get there before you, they will probably get there before you. That is how my plan of salvation will unfold. It will confound you at times because it is so generous, because it looks at the heart and not at the externals that you're often caught up in. So just because you're baptized, we'd say later on in history, you're not automatically in. Just because you're going to church, not automatically in. Just because you're ABC, there's no automatic in, Jesus says. So at the end of the day then, we're back to the same question. Lord, will only a few people be saved? Who's in? Who's out? Jesus kind of shrugs and says, hard to say. Why does he say that exactly? In perfect Christian theology, right, in great Jesus fashion, this is an excellent teaching answer. Because he knows that the answer is in the middle of two competing tensions, right? If the Lord gives an answer to the question that says, yes, everyone's in, no problem, come on in, there is no difficulty. If he says, no problem, it's easy, we're never going to struggle, we're never going to improve, we're never going to work, we're never going to grow, we're never going to raise up saints who do heroic, beautiful things to help others or push society forward, there'll be none of that if we think we're just going to fall into heaven like falling out of bed. Doesn't work that way, no? At the same time, he can't say, well, the saved are this group of people right here, they live on this block. Well, that doesn't work. God's salvation is broader than that. His plan is more beautiful, his love higher and faith deeper than our little notions of it, so that's not right either. The answer is right in the narrow middle. So if we find ourselves in life contemplating this question, am I saved or not, and we should contemplate it all the time, and if we find ourselves never anxious about it, that's a problem. If we find ourselves always fearful, always doubting, that's a problem. The right answer is, yes, I want to have just a bit of anxiety about working on my salvation with the struggle that's necessary to conquer sin, to conquer difficulty, to conquer darkness. And at the same time, I'm not going to live in absolute fear either because the Lord is merciful, he is kind, he is generous, and his idea of salvation is far more expansive than my narrow vision of it often happens to be. So I'm going to sit between those two realities and just simply trust in his plan for me and work because I love, because he loves me so much. That's the narrow walk of discipleship, right down the middle of those two competing and very important ideas of life. If we do that, walk that narrow pathway, we'll make ourselves straight right through the narrow gate of heaven into the fullness of God's plan for our salvation.